Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, we have the latest headlines over the recall challenge against Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and how the petition is now in the spotlight for possible fraud. Plus, a former Milwaukee election official is found guilty of illegally requesting absentee ballots. And Governor Evers signs a flurry of bills into law and vetoes several others. We break down what you need to know. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for March 22nd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We're going to begin this week with the recall. As we've been following this, of course, it's been against Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And this week was one of the first times that the speaker spoke openly about this issue. And it comes as this week he formally filed a challenge to the thousands of signatures that were submitted. We know there was more than 10,000. And Voss argued that many of the signatures turned in were, quote, woefully short of the minimum needed to trigger a recall election. And like I mentioned, he had some, I would say, harsh words for organizers of this recall at a WizPolitics event earlier in the week. Let's first just take a listen of how he's, I guess, airing his frustrations about this whole topic. Take a listen.
I did not appreciate the fact that Mike Lindell and all the whack jobs that are associated with this sect of our party were going to spend a disproportionate amount of time and their effort to hire out-of-state recall people, almost all Democrats, to come into Wisconsin and try to get 8,000 signatures in my district. The people who organize this are so out of touch with reality. These people do not deserve the respect that anybody gave them in the media over the course of the last three months, but they literally now believe that I organized the recall and that I went out and found people to circulate it to discredit their efforts. I hope our district attorney will be able to prosecute these people for committing crimes, because the only people that I have seen so far that have committed election fraud are the very people who have done this in calendar year 2024.
So this challenge that was filed to the State Elections Commission yesterday, and Voss alleges that a lot of the signatures in question come from Voss's old district, which was the 63rd Assembly District, which was recently changed to the 33rd Assembly District under the new legislative maps that Governor Tony Evers signed into law earlier this year. The challenge by Voss also claims that there were a lot of out-of-state felons that were collecting some of these signatures. He also alleged that several pages of the signatures did not include valid addresses. And that kind of goes into our next topic, because there's a lot of individuals that have come forward recently that I've talked to this week that say, hey, I found my signature on this and I never agreed to sign this recall petition in the first place. It comes after we learned earlier in the week the Racine County District Attorney's Office is investigating possible instances of fraud. Now, there's about roughly 30 residents who have contacted the Racine County DA's office this week, who's individuals that say their signatures were forged. Still, organizers of the recall have long maintained that they followed strict adherence to the legal and ethical guidelines in this entire process, but it still looks like there's a lot of signatures in question this week, JR.
So the way to look at this Voss challenge is kind of like a three-headed monster. So the first monster is this should be allowed in the first place. The argument that there's not a map, essentially. So remember, in December of last year, State Supreme Court ruled the map used in 2022 is no longer constitutional and you cannot use that for election going forward. Voss argues, therefore, you can't use that map for recall election. The new map that Governor Evers signed last month has a provision that says it does not take effect until the fall elections, the August primary, November election. We're basically no man's land. So the argument is, one, there's no map to use for recall. The second tier is, even if you use either map, they're short in either district. So there's overlap between Robin's old district and the new one, but no matter which district you look at, they're short of the 6,850 needed, I believe it is, to trigger a recall. And that's even if you like count every one of those valid. The third head of the monster is all the fraud, that he alleges, the problems. So like when you circulate a nomination paper or a petition for recall, you can't be a felon who's not completed your sentence. He alleges that there are several felons who were not sure. Now, And his petition doesn't really make clear if they served it or not once the Elections Commission determined that. But if they haven't completed their sentence, not eligible to vote, they can't then circulate a petition. Those should all go away. So it's those different kinds of issues. But reality is, no matter which challenge might be successful, they look short. Now, the recall petitioners are not happy because they feel like Robin Voss created a loophole, that he knew what he was doing with this map and the provision that says these don't take effect until the November elections, essentially. Now, during that whole debate, recall, Devin Lemieux, Senator Julier, gave us a memo from the Reference Bureau saying this is standard language that we use all the time and put it into the bill, but it did create a situation where there's no map, so how can there be a recall?
Right, and this also raised a lot of questions from individuals I talked to and Speaker Voss, basically calling for recall reform in the future. Now, it was almost 10 years ago, right after Act 10 and the recall of former Governor Scott Walker, that Voss also calls for changes of the rules. Basically, his argument was that let's only use these in very serious circumstances, like if someone committed crimes, misdemeanors like that. We also heard from the residents I did this week that just want to have more safeguards in place. I mean, there's no really way to check if you sign a petition. How do I know if you're 18? How do I know if I live? You say where you live is actually where you live. So those are some of the things that we could see in the future possibly be changed about this whole thing. But it was just another discussion that happened this week with this whole issue. There's also now the topic that we've kind of talked a little bit about is just more clarity about when can you hold a recall, and if you do, what are the district maps are in place? So GOP lawmakers this week asked the state Supreme Court to reject a request from the state's Elections Commission to clarify which maps should be used for any recall, but also special elections that have occurred this spring. In that filing, Republicans argued the court, if deemed necessary, should confirm its December 22nd order that urged the commission to not use the 2022 maps for any future elections. So again, still no real clarity on this, but it's definitely something people are kind of want to know about.
In that filing, the Republican lawmakers said, look, you guys said you can't use the map, just reaffirm that, dismiss the case. In the alternative, the Elections Commission has the power to issue advisory opinions, to weigh in on election law and say this is what we think it's supposed to be. So if the Elections Commission wants an answer, it should come up with one, essentially. Ask the Attorney General for advisory opinion, make a decision. Same time, though, the timeline is getting very compressed. We're getting toward late March. Nomination papers for the fall elections go out April 15th, come back June 3rd. We are getting into a narrow window to be able to have anything done before the fall. Don't forget, this isn't just about Robin Voss. There's a vacancy in the 4th Senate District. Now, they've adjourned for the session. They're not coming back on the floor. But that office has been vacant now for, I think, a month and a half, something like that. And Governor Evers has said he would call a special election to fill it. There are two Democrats, Lakeisha Myers and Dora Drake, who said they want to run, and here's the dynamic for them. So the primary is all that matters in that 4th Senate. It's so Democratic, that's all that matters. If you win the primary, you know you're going to be in that seat not just for the special, but also for the fall election. It's going to be yours. If you lose that seat, you might want to run for the Assembly again. So both Dora and Lakeisha, I'm sure, would like an answer, an election, before June 3rd, so just in case, as a fallback plan, they can go run for their assembly seat again.
And, you know, it's also an important reminder when we talk about this recall why this is all happening. Of course, Voss was targeted after some very sharp criticism that he gave former President Donald Trump. Of course, Trump and many of supporters called on Voss to decertify the 2020 election. Well, that's an unethical, illegal move that he physically cannot do, or anyone in the state could have done after that point. There was also criticism by Trump supporters that he didn't impeach the state's chief election officer, Megan Wolf. And I'm bringing this up, too, because during the Wiz Politics event on Tuesday, Voss also said that, well, I'm going to endorse Trump. And it kind of just raises questions because, you know, not too long ago, and over, I would say probably for the past year, Voss has were pretty harsh about Voss and saying that he's a loser. He's not going to win if he's going to be the nominee. He called him stupid. It'd be stupid for voters to pick him as the nominee. I think in the end, we knew Voss was always going to back whoever the future nominee is. But it once again just kind of sheds light on how this they've had such a, you know, turmoil a little bit relationship over the past few years.
Voss has always said, though, I plan on voting for the Republican nominee in 2024. I'm doing everything in my power to make sure it's not Donald Trump. But there's never been a time when he said, I might vote for Joe Biden. That's never been on the table.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So this is the natural kind of coalescing for Republicans, reluctant at times around their nominee, because both Biden and Trump have secured enough delegates to secure the nomination. The race is over. Mm-hmm. This is your choice. If you're a Republican, you either vote for Trump or not vote for a Republican candidate this fall.
All right. And let's stay on the topic of fraud, because this week a former Milwaukee election official was convicted of ballot fraud. We're talking about Kimberly Zapata. She was the former deputy director of the Milwaukee Election Commission, and she was found guilty by a jury this week for fraud and misconduct in office after she obtained fake absentee ballots for non-existent military voters, leading just really close up to the 2022 election. Now, Zapata's attorney during the trial argued that she saw herself as a whistleblower, and she was trying to expose flaws in the state's My Vote system, which is where voters go on and request absentee ballots. Meanwhile, prosecutors maintained that she was a fraudster. You know, Zapata, during this, when she talked to investigators in the criminal complaint, openly admitted she did this. So is this outcome surprising? I would say no. But she still tried to maintain that, hey, I really thought there was a problem here. But, you know, looking at the term whistleblower, JR, what's interesting to me, usually you don't commit the crime when you want to expose vulnerabilities somewhere.
Oh, the line this week has been, go steal a TV, then tell the cops, hey, I was trying to show that, you know, Best Buy didn't have the greatest security at the store. It's not going to work. Don't forget Harry Waite is also facing a trial on similar charges where he requested absentee ballots. The names of Robin Voss, I believe, and Corey Mason, the Racine mayor. He's openly said he did it. They broke the law. Yes, they're trying to expose a vulnerability in their minds, but that's not how you normally do it. Also, remember, with military voters, there is, you know, this provision in state law that you have to show a photo ID if you're a military voter. Nothing's been done to address that provision since this happened.
They've tried to. Mm-hmm. There has been legislation to try and do something like that, but the bill that went through a lot of public hearings, there was a big issue with the federal government and their standards already in place. So if they come to a consensus, I mean, remains to be seen, but they're trying to, but it was just one of those election bills that just never got over the hump.
And the argument is, there are other ways to catch this if there are people. They were never sent in, right? They were sent to Janelle Branchon, Republican lawmaker, that there's a way to catch this fraud if it does happen.
All right, let's move on to some other topics this week. And we're talking about oral contraception and expanding access to it after Governor Tony Evers issued an order that will expand access to the pill Opal for Badger Care Plus recipients. Now, Evers made this announcement during his State of the State address to ensure greater access to over-the-counter contraception, and just speaks to the bigger overall narrative as Evers and other Democrats are trying to keep the topic of, you know, ever since the abortion law was after Roe v. Wade was overturned, still just trying to keep the issue of abortion and expanding access to other individuals who can't get it.
So Badger Care Plus, we're talking people who are, we call them the working poor oftentimes in government. So if you are hit this poor designation, you qualify for federal programs for your health care. These are those who are just above that income limit. Now you can get this pill without a prescription, without out-of-pocket costs from any pharmacist that participates in a Medicaid program in Wisconsin. And yes, this is all about access and continue to promote that. This is something the governor talked about in the State of the State address, that he's going to do this in the standing order through DHS, Department of Health Services, to allow this to happen.
All right. And we're going to get to now a series of bills that Governor Evers signed and vetoed this week. We expect probably more, maybe today and the following week. Usually what happens when the end of a legislation comes, he has a lot of bills to get through. We're just going to highlight a few right now. Some of the signed ones that happened yesterday would include a disclosing AI used in campaign ads. So if you're going to use it, there has to be basically a banner at the bottom notifying voters that it was used. Another election-related bill would prohibit last-minute closures of polling places. This was a big issue during the April 2020 election. Of course, the height of the pandemic. There was places like Green Bay and Milwaukee. I believe Milwaukee only had 5 polling locations on that day because of just closures. People are sick. People don't want to work the polls during a pandemic. So this would kind of prevent those type of things happening in the future. Another bill would crack down on catalytic converter thefts. This is also another big issue in Milwaukee, but of course, across the state, a lot of thieves can actively take them and try to sell them. This would make it more difficult to show proof that you didn't steal it. More bills that were signed into law would stiffen penalties for drivers who don't stop for a school bus. It would go from about $50 to $300. And now let's just touch on a little bit of the bills that were vetoed, more election-related ones. One would modify how close someone can stand next to poll workers. There was another bill that he vetoed around the rules of filling vacancies in the executive branch. This was introduced by Republican lawmakers after Secretary of State, well, now Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski, was appointed to the position just after Doug LaFollette stepped down. They wanted to have a special election instead of Evers doing that. Another bill is there would have been required to have automatic post-election audits. So kind of a election themed, but a lot of other bills in that.
Yeah, so like the poll observer has been a big issue for Republicans since 2020. State law says you can be you have to be between 3 feet and 8 feet away. And during COVID in 2020, a lot of clerks took that eight as the distance they wanted because of social distancing. This bill would have said no more than 3 feet away. Well, Evers said you're going to have people right on top of those who are checking in people, showing an ID, giving their address, going to registering, that would have allowed intimidation, his words in his veto message. None of these were a surprise. They're all ones that Republicans have pushed because of the cry from the base for change after 2020, and all ones that pass on basically partisan lines.
All right. Let's get to another action by the governor this week is now that Wisconsin will be receiving $78 million in federal funds to build new electric vehicle charging stations across the state after Governor Evers signed some more bills into Wednesday, which basically laid the groundwork for this project to happen. So this move will change how EV charging stations can bill customers and establish a program with the state to deploy federal funds under the 2021 infrastructure law that was passed by Congress. We knew this was going to happen at some point, but you know, it kind of took lawmakers a little bit to get this bill across. It's something that all 50 states have to do in order to get to these federal funds. But what I thought was interesting this week, too, we had Speaker Voss kind of really shoot down these federal funds, calling them a waste. He doesn't believe that there's going to be electric cars in the future. I was just kind of skeptical about the whole thing.
So what he's saying is that this is a transportation bill that funded all things that weren't really transportation, in his mind, that the money should go toward roads, constructing them, rehabilitating them. You're having people have a political agenda dictate where money goes, and then the $78 million toward EV charging stations, something that should happen in the private sector. This is going to be a waste of money. A boondoggle, he said. His argument was 10 years from now, the consumers aren't going to be looking at electric cars, although we just saw a proposed rule from the EPA this week that would basically phase out gas-powered vehicles by new cars by 2030, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Has a lot of nuances. You must be either electric or hybrid. So it will all depend on who wins the White House this fall, if that goes anywhere. And then, of course, you have the courts involved in Congress. But, yeah.
Yeah, we've also seen, too, lawmakers try to introduce proposals to not have bans on, like, gas-powered lawnmowers and other, you know, lawn equipment. That's also been a big discussion, too, as people are trying to, federal government, largely, under the Biden administration, trying to move more green. But, you know, some Republicans are still skeptical of this, and people want a gas lawnmower, not one charged with a battery. But everyone's got their preference, right? Another topic we're going to get to this week is related to the Apple lawsuit. And just want to mention this because Wisconsin is one of 16 states that joined this sweeping lawsuit that alleges the iPhone maker has a monopoly over the cell phone market. Now, the state joined the U.S. Department of Justice and 16 other states, like I mentioned, in a civil antitrust lawsuit against Apple that accused the tech giant of trying to edge out the competition to ensure customers continue to use their products. Of course, this was a big national story that happened yesterday, JR, but it's definitely noteworthy to say if this is successful, this can lead to more options for iPhone users, you know, such as using an alternative app store. You know, if right now, if you have a green or blue bubble debate, you know, if you're texting someone that has an Android with a Google phone, those are some of the practices that the U.S. Department of Justice and attorney generals are arguing that, hey, it's not quite fair. Apple is trying to make their products look worse and trying to have their customers keep buying iPhones. So by any means, this is going to take years, is what they predict, for any resolution to happen with this. Of course, Apple denies all the allegations in this sweeping lawsuit, but just something to keep an eye on as tech giants in general have been really targeted in the news by lawmakers for the past several years. Let's get to stock picks this week. And rising this week is Eric Hovde. Why? Well, he doesn't really have a primary right now.
Yeah, so Scott Mayer has been toying the idea of running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate for a while. Franklin businessman told me this week that he decided against it, that he basically didn't have the appetite to spend $20 million of his own money on a primary. He, of course, said he could have beaten Hovde in a primary. He, of course, said he could have beaten Timmy Baldwin in general election. But he didn't want to go through because he thought that would lessen the chances of Republicans winning that seat. So now for Hovde, this is obviously good news. Go back to 2012. Tommy Thompson had a 3 or 4 way GOP primary, came out of that one pretty much broke, and it was kind of bruising. Tammy Baldwin used the window after that primer's over to label him as not for us anymore. That really stuck, and Tommy never really recovered. In 2018, Leo Vukmir, then a state senator, rode the power of talk radio in southeastern Wisconsin to beat Kevin Nicholson for the GOP nomination, then never got the cash together afterward to give Baldwin a run for her money. So now Hovde can avoid that whole dynamic of, okay, I've got to win the nomination first, and then I get a chance at Baldwin. Same time, you know, Sheriff Clark still talks about running for U.S. Senate. I don't think anybody, people I talk to don't take it seriously. He's more bluster than anything else. There are two lesser-known candidates that have filed the run. Side note, Republican Party of Wisconsin is going to do an endorsement process at the convention. 2 years ago, you had to raise $100,000 by a certain point in mid-March to be eligible for the endorsement. This year, it's $1 million by end of March. That's probably not going to be a benchmark anybody but Hovde hits, so that's good for him as well. So, okay, so Hovde's probably going to be the nominee, more than likely. But he's still got work to do. So we're seeing now ad spending in the Senate race. We're also seeing a new poll from Emerson College that has, it went from being like a 7-point gap between Baldwin and Hovde to 3 points. In talking to people this week, they said, you know, yeah, Hovde's up on the air, but he's not dominating the airwaves. You're all seeing Baldwin and the Senate Democrats running spots as well. That probably isn't movement because of ads. It's probably more of people going, okay, it's getting closer to election time. I've got Republican, they're identifying him as the Republican. Baldwin's the Democrat. This is the floor for Republican running as Tammy Baldwin. It's 42% roughly, wherever he is. So that's what's probably going on. He has work to do to introduce himself to people as Eric Hovde, what he wants to be. A guy's going to, you know, find solutions to problems, those kinds of things, whereas Baldwin and the Democrats argue he's a guy who lives in California, really. Owns a bank. You're going to hear talk about abortion. They're going to bring back comments from past runs or past interviews. We've talked about single parents and like societal problems, Affordable Care Act, abortion, calling college kids lazy. I mean, like, just go on down the list. You're going to see that kind of stuff brought back up to try and define him a little bit. One fascinating thing that I've been talking to people about is the idea of how do Hovde and Baldwin run above the top of the ticket. So I went back and looked in 2016. Donald Trump got about 47% in a decimal point in the presidential race. Hillary Clinton got 46.5, roughly. Ron Johnson got to 50%. He was an incumbent. Eric Hovde is not an incumbent, right? So what I'm looking at with this fall is, let's say Biden and Trump continue to be in the mid-40s. Every poll that I've seen has got like 47, 44, 46, 42, you know, somewhere in that neck of the woods. Let's say Biden gets a little better as Democrats come home and they end up being a 47, 45 race. Either way, where do the other ones go? Like, where does the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. voter go in the Senate race? The Cornel West voter, the Jill Stein voter, do they go toward Baldwin or Hovde? Talking to people so far, they feel more like Baldwin has a better capacity to rise above the top of the ticket than Hovde does. You know, by the way, Hovde needs that fine line of like the Trump base being excited for him, while also not going so far to the Trumpy side to lose those suburban college-educated voters who used to be rock-solid Republicans who now have left. So how's that going to work? That's a fine line to walk. So these would be interesting. That might be the key question in this race. Who can run above their presidential nominee, and how far above him can you run to win?
That was going to be definitely what I was just about to touch on with Hovde. There's just a lot of question of where he is on the Trump scale. I think that's the question for any Republican candidate now running in Wisconsin, but also nationally. Do you have doubts about the 2020 election? Do you want Donald Trump's endorsement? Do you want that tie? It's been proven successful and unsuccessful in the past statewide elections and nationally as well. I also talked to some Republican strategists who are kind of wishing Scott Mayer got in the race, because sometimes when you have a primary, you get that energy, you get your name recognition out there, more people want to go to the polls and pick between the two, do a little bit more research about the candidates, and you come out a little bit strong, right? I won my primary, now I'm ready to gung-ho and get ready for the fall. So that's just kind of the other side of it, too, of not having a primary.
Baldwin's also got some things to worry about. Look, this Israel-Hamas issue is not going away. Mm-hmm. It is a problem for the base. She's been pressured about calling for a ceasefire, so you get the impression that she is not quite... I'm watching to see if the Democratic base solidifies behind her, if there's some softness there. Mm-hmm. And will they come home come November?
Right. Well, let's get to Mix this week and Warren Petrick, kind of more of the watch of where people are running and choosing not to run.
So look, there are about a dozen Assembly Democrats who are drawn into 55-ish% Democratic seats in the new maps. Warren Petrick is one of them. Dana Walks, former state lawmaker, left the Assembly to run for governor in 2018. Got on the Board of Regents via appointment by Tony Evers, was fired by the state Senate last week. He had floated right away on social media after his nomination was rejected, should I run for the 93rd Assembly District? Well, a week later, he posted back on Facebook, can't do it. He's a lawyer. He's got 8 jury trials coming up. He's like, I can't do that and hurt my clients. Okay, so look, for Democrats, there is no plausible way to the majority without winning seats like the one Petrick has, the 93rd Assembly District up by Eau Claire. You can't just put a generic Democrat, though, in that seat. You have to have someone who's going to raise money, going to work hard, because even at 55%, you've got an incumbent who's got 100-some thousand bucks in the bank. Walks would have been an easier lift for Democrats to win that seat if they're in a position to do so. So they got to find somebody a little stronger than the average, just a person with a D behind his or her name. But there are other Republicans in the same situation, and Democrats have to go after those seats. I mean, Jesse Rodriguez, suburban Milwaukee, we haven't heard from her yet what she's going to do. There's a district north of Madison, John Plumer of Lodi, William Penterman of Columbus. Penterman's going to move to a Republican district. You haven't heard from Plumer yet. What's he going to do? That's a 55-plus Dem district as well. So you're seeing these examples of where they have to go win to get the majority. Robin Voss, during the lunch we had this week, was quite confident that Republicans will maintain the majority. He ticked off the number of 55% Republican seats, saying those are hard to lose. There are 3 between 51 and 55%. He said gets him to 49 vote seats right away. So he's got to win one competitive seat, he says, to secure the majority. And he felt like Democrats come back with 45 seats. Don't forget, though, top of the ticket. So Democrats should have plenty of money. Ben Wickler's been a machine raising money at the state party. That shouldn't be a problem. The candidates, that's not say a challenge, but it is work to do because typically in a race, a cycle, you've got like a half dozen competitive seats. You got to find a good 16 candidates to go from 34 seats you have now to 50, not including recruiting ones in seats you're losing because people are retiring. Mm-hmm. There are a dozen Assembly Democrats who might leave. That's a lot of people to find who can work hard, raise money,
and
go
want
do
to
doors.
Do this job.
Yeah. You know, it used to be the pitch was, hey, come join some of the Democrats. We're trying to stop a supermajority.
Right.
Now it's like, hey, we might get to a majority maybe this year, but maybe another cycle or two. So anyway, the point is, here's a great example of somebody who is a Republican incumbent in a tough seat that has got a choice ahead of him. Does he want to run? Haven't heard yet. Warren, call me back. What's he going to do? And then those guys could be the key to like what the numbers are and how good a chance Republicans have to hold that majority this fall.
All right, and let's get to falling this week as affordable housing after a new report shows that home prices are rising faster than income.
So,
well, yeah. Sorry.
So house prices, the median house price in 2022 had risen 53%, according to the Wisconsin Policy Forum, income about 19%. In the report, it talks about that real estate agents have a rule of thumb roughly that you want to spend 2.6 times, or you can afford 2.6 times your salary on a house. It's well north of 3 right now for the state. Then there are pockets where it's even worse. You know, Dane County is one up to 4.5 times. The other ones on that list are largely in touristy areas, like up north, Door County, for example, a lot of recreational homes. The Menominee County, which is home to a large reservation, only had a few, less than 20 home sales, though, in 2022, so it's hard to see that's just volatility. But anyway, the point is there's a triple whammy right now. You have high interest rates, you have low stock that's really kind of, and rising prices that are all making it harder to afford a new home. A little bit of good news for the realtors that, you know, there's a little more stock out there in February of 24 versus February 23. And also Biden is proposing this new tax credit to try and spur sales. Now, it's not going to happen because Congress is not going to pass something, but it shows you this is an election issue. It's on voters' minds that they can't afford a new home. And people who are in homes don't want to sell them to go to a new one because interest rates are so much higher than the one they had from 20 years ago, et cetera, that causes lots of issues.
And the federal government said this week that they estimate that interest rates will fall 3 times this year. I'll be keeping an eye on that. I'll say that as a new homeowner. All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.